أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطيبين الطاهرين، اللهم صل على محمد. اللهم أخرجنا من ظلمات الوهم وأكرمنا بنور الفهم. اللهم افتح علينا أبواب رحمتك وانشر علينا من خزائن علومك يا أرحم الراحمين. اللهم علمنا ما ينفعنا وانفعنا بما علمتنا وزدنا علما. My brothers and my sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Muslim ibn Aqil was sent to Kufa to verify the letters that Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam had received from the people asking him to come, asking him to lead them in a revolution against Yazid ibn Muawiyah. Muslim went to Kufa. And he received the bay'ah from 18,000 people. Unfortunately, when Yazid heard of what was happening, he sent Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad as the new governor of Kufa, and he stopped the movement of Muslim. He divided the forces of Muslim. Muslim couldn't gather his supporters until he was alone. And then he was executed in the palace of the governor and his body thrown from the palace for all people to see. The man who Muslim was staying with, who he was hiding at his house, was Hani ibn Urwa. Hani was still imprisoned. He was the one that Muslim was trying to save when he went to storm the palace with his few supporters. Hani was now dragged out of the prison. Hani sees the body of Muslim. He starts to shout, "Where are the supporters? Where is my clan? Where are my tribespeople? Where is everyone?" No response. Anyone who had the guts to respond was taken as a prisoner until Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad had rounded up 4,000 prisoners in Kufa. 4,000. The remaining people were now never going to dare to rise up against Yazid, especially after making an example of Muslim and now of Hani. Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad orders for Hani to be taken into the marketplace where animals are sold, where sheep is sold. Hani is taken handcuffed. The executioner places his hand onto Hani's head and he stretches out his neck and he hits him twice, two strikes to behead him. Everyone sees this example being made out of such a huge figure like Hani. Once his supporters have been divided and conquered and imprisoned, there's nothing that they could do. Then the bodies of Hani and Muslim are dragged by their feet through the town center and then hung up in the middle of the town for all to see, whilst their heads were sent to Sham to Yazid ibn Muawiyah. Yazid receives this gift, the heads of Muslim ibn Aqil and Hani ibn Urwa. And he sends a letter back to Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad telling him, "Congratulations on this victory. Now your mission is to stop Hussein ibn Ali from entering Iraq, from entering Kufa. Do not let him enter Kufa as a free man. You stop him by any means." Now this was the mission. So Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad set forth his security positions in so many stations before Kufa, so that anyone who was coming would not come if they were with Hussein ibn Ali or trying to support him, and so that they could capture Hussein ibn Ali and bring him into Kufa as a prisoner, as Muawiyah always wanted with Imam al-Hassan. Yazid wanted to make it happen with Imam al-Hussein. They wanted to capture Imam al-Hussein, dead or alive. So now they were stationing at different camps before Kufa, waiting for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam to arrive. In Kufa, those who could make a voice of dissent, those who could rise, were rounded up, especially people like Mukhtar al-Thaqafi. Now the remaining people, not only were they scared to make any movement against Yazid or Ubaydullah, not only were they scared, but now they were being made into soldiers that would fight against Imam al-Hussein. Imagine the people who were asking him to come, the people who had pledged allegiance, were now joining the army, whether they wanted to or not. They were joining the army that would eventually go to fight Imam al-Hussein in Karbala. And now they would prove their loyalties the same way they did in the time of Imam al-Hassan, when they would prove their loyalty by cursing Ali ibn Abi Talib. Now they were proving their loyalty to prove that they are against the movement of Imam al-Hussein, even if they were loyal to him before this, so that they could protect their family and their wealth and their children. Out of 18,000 people who pledged allegiance, only 4,000 were taken as prisoners. What happened to the other 14,000? What happened to the greater population of Kufa that didn't have the opportunity to give the bay'ah? Unfortunately, the people of Kufa, the ones that remained, had turned on Aba Abdullah al-Hussein alayhi salam. And the ones that were loyal were either killed or imprisoned. Now, Imam al-Hussein was gathering his Sahaba in Mecca. The Imam needed an entire ummah. The Imam needed a nation. He needed figures of prestige, of high prestige. And he was able to gather 17 official Sahaba. But we have five figures who are notable absentees from the journey of Aba Abdullah into Karbala. And those are Ibn Abbas and Muhammad ibn al-Hanafiyyah, his brother, who we have mentioned before, and Abdullah ibn Ja'far, the husband of Sayyidah Zainab alayhi salam, and Abdullah ibn Umar, the son of the second Khalifa, who was also mentioned in the letter with Imam al-Hussein to give bay'ah, and the third person in the letter mentioned to give bay'ah, Abdullah ibn Zubayr. These are five notable absentees because they were all prestigious figures. Looking at Ibn Abbas, we see that he was of very old age and he was blind. But still, we have to consider if that is an excuse, because we have someone like Al-Tufl al-Radi'a, we have Ali al-Asghar, who was 6 months old. We have Qasim ibn al-Hasan, who was just a young boy, just old enough to hold a sword. We still say there are no excuses for anyone not to go with Imam al-Hussein. When it comes to Muhammad ibn al-Hanafiyyah, then we are told in different sources that he was either sick, or that, like I mentioned before, the Imam told him to remain in Medina as his source of intelligence. But the Imam then sends a letter afterwards, which I'll mention shortly. We still see that they should all have been able to go with the Imam to Karbala. We don't know what the reason is. We don't want to accuse them. I don't want to accuse, especially sincere ones like Muhammad ibn Hanafiyyah or Abdullah ibn Ja'far. Abdullah ibn Ja'far was a very strong man. He fought with Imam Ali alayhi salam in Siffin. He was a follower of the Imams. He was the husband of Sayyidah Zainab. His children were in Karbala. It's very strange that he wasn't with them. And so one has to look into the sources to read in between the lines to find out why was he absent or where was he. What we do know is whoever didn't go missed out on the greatest victory. As for one like Abdullah ibn Zubayr, I cannot group him with the sincere ones. He is someone who fled in the dark of the night from Medina to Mecca. And he is someone who was competing with Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam for popularity and for the caliphate. And he is someone who would not even say salawat on the Ahlul Bayt, Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. He would not say salawat on the Ahlul Bayt after his Friday khutbah because of how much enmity he had towards the Ahlul Bayt. So for him, I can't make any excuses for him at all. As for one like Abdullah ibn Umar, Abdullah ibn Umar was someone the Imam came to and asked him personally to come and join him. And Abdullah ibn Umar told him, Ya Hussein, I fear for you, for what will happen if you continue on this path of not giving bay'ah to Yazid. I advise you to give the bay'ah and avoid all this bloodshed. The Imam responded to him, Ya Abdullah, you advised me, now let me advise you. You think that I would pledge allegiance for such a world as this world, a world where one, like the Prophet of Allah, Nabi Yahya, is beheaded and his head is given to a woman who is a fornicator as a prize. This world, the value of this world, you want me to give in to this world? When Islam, right now, the religion of my grandfather, the path of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is relying on our actions and our movement, on people like you to join my path, I advise you, Ya Abdullah, to fear Allah and to join me and don't mess up your own akhirah. Then Abdullah ibn Umar, he became emotional because he didn't want the Imam to suffer. But then he said, let me kiss the chest that the Prophet used to kiss. Before you go, let me kiss your chest. That was his reply. It wasn't Arasi. It wasn't, I'm with you, Ya Imam. It was, let me kiss your chest. I love you, but I can't go with you. You see, loving the Ahlul Bayt is not enough just loving them on its own. You have to give yourself. And we see that again and again and again in the movement of the Imam. It's not enough just to say. It's not enough just to feel emotional. And to cry for the Imam is of the highest levels that anyone can attain in this world. But even crying for the Imam is not enough on its own. We have to unify our actions with our tears. And we see that in the journey. And this is a great example of that. Because this very man, Abdullah ibn Umar, afterwards, after Imam Hussein leaves, he sends a letter to Yazid ibn Muawiyah telling him, I recognize you as my Khalifa and I pledge my allegiance to you. And even afterwards, years later, after the Battle of Karbala, when people begin to rise up against Yazid, inspired by Karbala and what happened on Ashura, he actually tells the people, you're not allowed to go against the Khalifa of your time. You're not allowed to go against Yazid ibn Muawiyah. So he becomes a loyal follower of Yazid. But here he says, let me kiss the chest that the Prophet used to kiss. So we find that the Imam was not able to gather all these people to rise up against Yazid. But the people in Iraq were different. People of Kufa had sent him letters. The people were waiting. There were people who followed his father before. So it was fertile ground. The Imam was ready. But he knew about what was happening. He knew eventually and ultimately what would occur because he kept saying it. And when he met with a man by the name of Farazdaq, who was coming to Hajj with his mother, who had come from Kufa, he says to him, how was what you left in Iraq? What did you see in Iraq, of the people of Iraq? And he told him of what he saw. And he said, قُلُوبُهُمْ مَعَكْ وَسُيُوفُهُمْ عَلَيْكْ. He said, their hearts are with you, but their swords are against you. And that is the essence of the story and the essence of this world. In this world, we see it all the time. We see hearts for good, but the actions do not follow. So the Imam continued on his path, even after knowing that people would attack him, even after constantly being told by all these different sahabas, they're going to betray you. Ibn Abbas told him, they're going to betray you. Abdullah ibn Umar told him, they're going to betray you. They're going to kill you. There's going to be bloodshed. The Imam knew. And now Farazdaq told him that their swords are against you. He said, أَعْلَمْ أَنَّهُمْ قَاتِلِي وَلَكِنْ لِلَّهِ الْأَمْرِ. I know they want to kill me. I know they're going to kill me ultimately. I know what's going to happen. He kept repeating, I know. Why? So everyone sees him. I know what I'm doing. I'm not doing this without knowledge. There's something in mind here. There's a goal. There's a lofty goal. And if you are following these sessions, slowly you begin to understand his mindset. Then the Imam writes a letter to his brother, Muhammad ibn al-Hanafiyya in Mecca. And this is a famous letter, very short letter, beautiful letter. The Imam says, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, فَإِنَّ من لحق بي استشهد ومن تخلف لم يدرك الفتح. He says that whoever follows me will be martyred, will be killed, will be slaughtered. And whoever diverts from my path, they will not experience the fatah. They will not experience the victory. What does he mean? He tells his brother this. And Muhammad ibn Hanafiyya, it's said in the sources, he gathers whoever is left from the family in Medina and they come to Mecca. But again, Muhammad does not come to Karbala. And yes, it says that he's sick. He's so sick that he can't lift a sword. But we still say everyone who could come should come. Everyone who could come should come. And we don't accuse someone like Muhammad bin Hanafiyya. But what we do know is if he wasn't there, he missed that fatah. That fatah was only for who was in Karbala. And that fatah shows us, it tells us something. Victory even in death, not only in terms of the aims of Abu Abdullah alayhi salam, or that martyrdom fi sabilillah, but even in terms of us sitting here 1,400 years later, where is Yazid? Where is Muawiyah? Where is Hussein? We're still inspired till this day. This world is rocked by the Imam's movement till this day. Not only in Akhirah, also in Dunya. And so we move on the path of Abu Abdullah alayhi salam. The Imam, he tells the people that he's continuing on the path to Kufa. Why does the Imam do this? You see, he wants to show that his movement has two main horizons. There are two pillars to his movement. And they have to stay together. They don't work without the other. The first pillar is that the Imam is moving towards Kufa. And everyone who is able to join must join. Everyone who is available and able-bodied must join the movement. They must join the Imam to enjoin the good, forbid the evil, defeat the tyrant, the taghut, and establish God's law and government on earth, the just system of Allah. They must do this. That's the first pillar. The second pillar is, if they are on the way to doing this and they are not able to, then they die in the way of Allah. Martyrdom. Al-shahada fi sabilillah. Pillar two, martyrdom, does not work without pillar one. Some people think that the Imam went and his goal was martyrdom and that's it. No. Martyrdom has to be for a cause. Martyrdom for something. He doesn't go to get slaughtered for no reason. Pillar two, the martyrdom is the catalyst because he said, whoever comes with me, stushhid, we will be martyred. 100% in certainty, if you come, we are going to die in the way of Allah. But do you see, it has to be for pillar one. Pillar two only works if it's in the path of pillar one. Then the pillar can be a catalyst. Martyrdom is then a catalyst. And that's why the Imam was going towards Iraq, because he needed to do this in a fertile land that could accept this catalyst. So when he keeps getting told that you're going to be killed, and he says, I know. He's choosing the stage. He knows what he's doing. He's choosing a way in which this catalyst can have the most efficient effect that it can possibly have. There remains the issue of another figure, one by the name of Zuhair ibn Qayn. He was one of the prominent warriors in the Battle of Karbala. And some historians say that Zuhair was a follower of Uthman ibn Affan, and that he was trying to avoid Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, and that he would avoid him. And the way that he was moving in the desert was when the Imam would move, Zuhair would rest. And when the Imam would rest, Zuhair would move, so that he doesn't come across the Imam, and that when the Imam comes across him, he convinces him to join him. Whereas the reports tell us differently. The reports do not make it seem like actually he was the follower of Uthman. and that he was in Mecca the whole time that the Imam was in Mecca, and that he would see him in the Haram often. And we can't conceive the idea that the Imam had not spoke to him in the 125 days that he was there, especially considering that the Imam left Mecca about 5 or 6 days before the end of Hajj. And Zuhayr completed his Hajj before joining the Imam. So what actually happened was, the Imam left, and after 5 or 6 days, Zuhayr finished his Hajj, and then he hurried to meet the Imam, because the Imam was known that he was moving fast towards Kufa. So he had to hurry to meet the Imam, because it was impossible that Zuhayr ibn Qayn was going to let the Imam go without him. He was not going to miss on this caravan, especially after the Imam had said, whoever does not come with me, he is only suffering defeat and failure. That the ones who come are the ones who will experience the fatah. The ones who don't will never experience the fatah. So Zuhayr was a loyal follower, and he went with him. And that's why on the day of Karbala, when they were fighting Zuhayr, and they said, we didn't know that you were a follower of the Ahlul Bayt. And he said to them, does my stance now make it obvious to you? Yes, I am a follower. I am one of them. So on that day, he was of the most prominent warriors. So you had people like him who wanted to join the Imam. They finished the Hajj and they hurried to meet with the Imam. And then you have people like Abdullah ibn Umar, who told him, let me kiss your chest, the place the Prophet would kiss, because he knew this would be a place of pain in the future, the chest of Abu Abdullah alayhi salam. Now the Imam had decided that he was going to go forward into Kufa, no matter whatever was to happen. And he received news of the martyrdom of Muslim ibn Aqil. The Imam received a letter detailing what occurred with his cousin and beloved brother, Muslim ibn Aqil. The Imam is pained by what happens to Muslim, but knows that the mission must continue. It doesn't end here. The blood of Muslim is the beginning of this journey and the beginning of this caravan. So then the Imam turns to those he had gathered, the supporters who are now with him coming from Mecca, that wanted to go with him to Kufa. He tells them, my people, those in Kufa, have betrayed us. And they have turned and killed Muslim ibn Aqil. There are but few supporters now. I accept for those of you who don't wish to come with me any longer. But if you ask me what I will do now, I will continue on my journey to Kufa. After this speech, the Imam began to lose his followers, one by one, two by two, until only the original group that emerged from Mecca are now with him. The Imam continues on his way. Many people now rightly ask, how come the Imam continued even after knowing what happened to Muslim ibn Aqil? To answer that question, some scholars have said it was his taklif, it was his duty, and that the Imam had to go. That was just his duty before Allah. But we can't accept that answer, because it's the taklif of each and every single one of us to go against Fir'aun, to go against the tyrant, in whatever way that we can. Especially if the Imam of your time is there with you and going, of course your taklif becomes very obvious. So it's not this very secret, mysterious, mystic taklif on Abu Abdullah. It becomes taklif on everyone. It's taklif on Muslim, taklif on Abu Abdullah, taklif on Ali al-Akbar, taklif on Muhammad ibn Hanafiya, taklif on Fadl Abbas, taklif on everyone who remained in Mecca and Medina. Taklif, if that's the case, it's on everyone. It's not this mystical, secret taklif on Abu Abdullah alone. So that's not the answer. But if we come to a logical conclusion, we can see that there are two main reasons. The first being that the Imam had to go to Kufa because those who had supported him were still there. If the Imam was to turn back now to Medina at this point, it would have been one of the most tragic defeats. Nothing would have come of it. Not only that, but the people would have said, after we sent letters and we gave bay'ah to Muslim ibn Aqil and we were attacked and so many of us taken prisoner and now so many of us fear for our lives and you didn't come? And we did this all for you and you didn't come? Imagine what excuses there could have been. Imam al-Hussein did not want there to be any excuses for this movement. He couldn't accept any excuses. So he never allowed the opportunity for anyone to have any of these excuses. He was going to go and he was going to give the hujjah onto these people that, look, I still came. And not only did I come, you have people in prison now because they were trying to follow the Imam. He needs to go. What happens to all the loyal ones? Does he just leave them? Those who are following him? Does he not owe them something in terms of his acceptance? He told them he was coming. And the Imam knows that. That's why he kept saying, I have an agreement with these people that I will not turn back on. If they turn back on it, I didn't turn back on it. Not only that, but the presence of the Imam is different. The Imam was told on several occasions himself from others. Others thought that and the Imam knew that. They said, you are not Muslim ibn Aqil. You are Hussein ibn Ali. It's different. When Hussein ibn Ali, the son of the Prophet and the son of the daughter of the Prophet and the son of Ali ibn Abi Talib, the one who was beloved in Kufa for so many years, if the son of the Prophet is in Kufa, it's different. If they see him and they're listening to him, and they gather around him and he can influence them. There is an importance of the leader. That's why people, they're zeros. You have six zeros. People are six zeros. And when one leader is there, they become a million. Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam could have turned them into a force that could be reckoned with. And he knew that. He knew that if he was to end up in Kufa, then there was still a chance they could revive the people's hearts. 18,000 had given bay'ah. That means there is so much potential. And the second reason is the Imam knew that there was no way he was going to give the bay'ah. And if he wasn't going to give the bay'ah, he knew that he was going to end up killed no matter what. Okay? This was inevitable. They were going to do whatever they could to kill him. And the Imam said, he did not want his blood to be spilled in Mecca. And the Imam wanted a place where his blood would be a catalyst, not only for the movement that would take out Yazid, but the movement that would take out all of Batil for all of time, would take Imam Hussein's blood. As we see even till now, we use his blood as our inspiration against all the tyrants and all the wrongdoers and evildoers of the world. And what Imam al-Mahdi will use when he comes, he will use that blood as the inspiration, his inspiration, and the people's inspiration. The Imam knew that he would be killed, and so he would be killed on his terms. He knew that he was going to do this in a way where he would set the stage in front of the people that it would affect the most. So the Imam was painting the picture for us. And that's why he kept telling us. He knew what he was doing. The Imam knew what he was going for. And martyrdom, pillar two, would only have that catalyst effect in service of pillar one, to go and take out the tyrant. So the Imam continued on to Kufa. The caravan of the Imam spent days and nights on the path towards Kufa. The Imam traveled with his beloved family, with Abu Fadl al-Abbas alayhi salam, with Sayyidah Zainab alayhi salam, with Ali al-Akbar alayhi salam, with his beloved baby, his wives, his companions. They were all together, moving in the night, resting, moving in the day, resting. They would stop at different stations on their way to Kufa and they were approaching. In one of these stations, the Imam comes across a man by the name of Ubaydullah ibn al-Hur al-Jufi. This man was a man who was a bandit. He was a man of Muawiyah. He fought with Muawiyah in Siffin. This was an evildoer. And the Imam came to him. The Imam first sent him a messenger, told him, go tell that man to join us on our path. Imagine. This man had the opportunity to make up for all the mistakes in your life. Imagine you had the opportunity to make up for all the mistakes you've ever done. Sometimes you get the opportunity, and you know Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is watching you. Everything wrong you've ever done, you can make it up with this really big decision and movement and sacrifice that you can make right now. This man, Ubaidullah, was in this position. But not only himself, the Imam of his time was calling him. First, he refuses the messenger. Then Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam decides, no, let me go myself. This is the beauty of Abu Abdullah. He goes to this man and he says, ya Ubaidullah, haven't your sins weighed you down, heavy on your shoulders? Don't you want to repent? Don't you want to make up for all the wrong that you've done? I'm giving you the opportunity now. Imagine the Imam's inviting him on a journey that he will experience the fatah. He can erase all the wrong he's done. If he just joins, the Imam wants everyone on this mission. He's inviting everyone who's able, come. You're all invited on this caravan of love. You're all invited on this path where we are given the opportunity to give ourselves to Allah, to give our lives for Allah and what Allah loves, good and justice and fairness. He's inviting everyone, even someone like Ubaidullah ibn al-Hur. And so this man says to him, ya Hussein, I see that the people in Kufa are not those that are going to support you. They're going to fight you. And there's nothing that I can offer you. There's no difference that I can make. What am I going to do? I'm one man. Look how he thinks. He thinks in terms of dunya. You see, he doesn't think in terms of his duty for Allah. So he says, I can't give you what you want. I can't join you. I care far too much about living. I want to live. I don't want to die. But if you wish, I will give you something valuable and worthy. I will give you my famous horse. This horse, there's no horse like this horse. There is no enemy that I have chased that I have not caught with this horse. And there's no one that I have ran from that I have not been able to evade with this horse. And the Imam sees what this man offers and says, if you prefer your life to the life of the family of the Prophet, then we have no need for you nor your horse. He gave him the opportunity. See, it's not about giving me what you have, your money. It's you. I want you. I don't want your money. I want you. I don't want your horse. I want you to come. You're missing the point. There's a movement here. There's something larger than just trying to live on. And this man, by the way, he dies a few years later in a very reckless way. You gave up eternal salvation just for a couple more years on this lowly plane. But then the Imam tells him last piece of advice. He says, Ubaidullah, run far away from here. Because anyone who hears my cry and doesn't come to my aid, Allah will deal with him on the day of judgment, and he will put him in the pits of the hellfire. So he even advises him to run. Don't even put yourself in a position where you're going to have to withstand to hear my cries and not come to help me. The Imam then continues on the path. In another one of these stations, known as Batn Aqaba, the Imam begins to have these dreams. And this dream is one of the saddest dreams that he has. And he begins to reveal his dreams to the people that are with him, telling them of what he's seeing of his visions. And this time he told them, I see in my dream that I am being killed and that nothing else waits for me at our destination except death. I see canines surrounding me, biting into me, tearing me apart. And the most fierce of those canines is a spotted one. He's the harshest one that is biting into me. And on the day of Ashura, the Imam, when he is fighting the enemy and he sees Shimr, and he says, you're the one that was in my dream. You are that wolf, that canine. The spotted canine, the harshest one, because of how Shimr was fighting and treating the Imam on that day. Now the Imam is sharing all these visions with his followers and his family. They can see he knows what he's doing. He's not going into this blind, but they trust him and they follow him because they know that he's had this goal in his mind from the beginning. He had a lofty goal from when he was at the shrine, the grave of his grandfather. He knew of something, this destiny that he was approaching. And now he was going to his destiny. He was not running away from his destiny. The Imam wasn't simply trying to avoid death or to find a way for them to spare his life. No, even more than that, he brought forth the woman and the children. He was going to paint the most beautiful picture of sacrifice in the way of God for all of eternity to witness. And he kept reciting through the days and through the nights, Inna lillah. وَإِنَّ إِلَيْهِ رَاجِعُونَ إِنَّا لِلَّهِ وَإِنَّ إِلَيْهِ رَاجِعُونَ To Allah we belong and to Him we return. Preparing himself and preparing his followers. And on one of these instances in the night time, Ali al-Akbar alayhi salam, he asks his father, he says, Abata, father, what's wrong? Why do you keep reciting those words? What's on your mind? And the Imam says, my son, in my sleep, I have been seeing visions and I just saw something. I saw that wherever we move, death follows us. Wherever these people move, death will follow them. And Ali al-Akbar tells him, but father, alasna ala al-haq, are we not upon the truth? And his father says, yes, of course we are. So Ali al-Akbar responds with a most beautiful response. And he says, فَإِذَنْ لَا نُبَالِي أَن نَمُوتَ مُحِقِّينَ So, who cares as long as we fight and we die upon the truth? He says, لَا نُبَالِي, I don't care. As long as we're upon the truth, father, that's all I care about. I don't fear death, and death won't stand in the way of my destiny serving you and serving my grandfather Rasulullah. If we are upon the truth, that's all I care about. This is how clear-headed these loyal soldiers of the Imam were. This is how the son of Aba Abdullah was. All he had in front of him was his goal, and all he cared about was the contentment of Allah. The Imam now was approaching and he was very close. At one of the closest stations, the Imam was getting ready to continue on his path towards Kufa when he saw a large group of people, about 1,000, many of them soldiers, led by Al-Hur ibn Yazid al-Riyahi. When they approached, the soldiers of the Imam put their hands on their swords and the Imam told them, no, go give them water. They must be thirsty. And so the soldiers of the Imam did as they were told. They went, they grabbed their water and they went and they offered it to the opposing party. Then the Imam gathered them all together. It was almost prayer time. So the Imam came and began to speak to them. He gave them all a speech. He said, I am Hussein ibn Ali and I have come as you have asked me to, O people of Kufa. I have received your letters and I have come to support you as you invited me. If you would like me to remain amongst you, then stay with me. And if you don't want me to be amongst you, then let me know so I may be on my way. There was no reply. So the Imam didn't say anything And he asked Hur, would you like to pray the Jama'ah prayer? And Hur said, no, you pray the Jama'ah prayer. The Imam then prayed with all of them. They all prayed behind him. Then the Imam gathered his supporters and they were intending to set on their ways. Hur had not yet told the Imam of his mission. Hur had been given a mission by Ubaidullah ibn Ziyad. And his mission was, do not let Hussein ibn Ali enter Kufa as a free man. This was Hur's mission. Hur didn't know what was to happen afterwards. He was not told of the end goal or the intentions of Ubaidullah or Yazid. This was his mission. And Hur had not yet told Imam al-Hussein. But as the Imam was preparing to leave to go to Kufa, Hur told him, I can't let you go. And the Imam said, why not? And Hur told him, please, I do not want to end up fighting the son of the Prophet. Please don't put me in that position. But I can't let you go. I've been given orders to remain with you, not to let you go, and to take you into Kufa myself as a prisoner. And the Imam said, you will never take me into Kufa as a prisoner. The Imam would only go into Kufa in the way that he chose to go in, never as a prisoner. But Hur told him, I can't leave you. These are my orders. Zuhair ibn Qayn and other warriors came to the Imam and told him, Imam, let us fight them now. If we fight them now, we can still have a chance against this number, 1,000 warriors. Even though they're outnumbered, we can still fight them. But once they become more, it might be difficult for us. And the Imam told him, I don't want to begin the fight against them. I will not attack them before they attack me. And they hadn't yet attacked the Imam. The Imam then gathered his supporters and set on his way anyway. He kept going, but then Hur would stop him. He kept going and then Hur would stop him again. Suddenly, four people were coming from the direction of Kufa, coming to join the Imam, but Hur caught them and stopped them and imprisoned them amongst his soldiers. The Imam told him, what are you doing with those four men? They are my ashab, they are my companions and my ansar, they've come to help me. He said, no, but they didn't come with you. I'm not taking anyone who came with you. I'm taking some of them who came from Kufa. The Imam told him, no, it's as if they came with me. They are my helpers and my companions. You release them now. And so Hur released them. And they came and they joined the Imam. And the Imam told Hur, let me go on my way, ya Hur. And Hur wouldn't accept. They kept going. Hur kept positioning his army in a way that they would not allow the army of the Imam to go. So ultimately, the army of the Imam was diverted from going towards Kufa. Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam was bent on reaching Kufa. He had to reach Kufa. This was the only way. The Imam was not going to accept Hur stopping him. But Hur receives orders again from Ubaidullah ibn Ziyad to stop the Imam, to set up camp. They have diverted so far that the Imam then asks, what land is this? And he's responded to and they say, Nainawa. Then the Imam asks, what land is this? And they say, Al-Ghadiriyya. And finally the Imam asks one more time, what's the name of this land? And he is told, Karbala. When the Imam hears that name, he remembers. As Hur sets up camp in this place, by the river Euphrates, and sets up his army in front of the water, the Imam looks back at his caravan and he says, this is where we will camp, my family, my companions. Set up your camp here. I know this land, the land of Karbala. I came here before with my father. I remember on the way to Siffin when I was with my father, and he stopped in this land and he got off of his horse and he said, this will be the land. And they said that Imam Ali cried in this land. Then the Imam tells his companions and his family, my companions, it is in this land that we will be killed and our children will be taken as captives and our women will be taken along with them. Set up your camps as we meet our destiny. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطيبين الطاهرين.